How would you like to attend a very dull party?
This is the Extra Hot Grape Podcast, episode 20 for the week of Monday, February 10th, 2014. I am lazy hotel construction foreman David T. Cole, and I'm here with East German judge Sarah D. Bunting.
Schnell.
Total loser Tara Ariano.
I fell.
And triple lutz Joe Reed.
Nailed it.
Making his triumphant debut return.
Yeah.
Not debut, return since
that's right.
Leaving guest us. Debut.
First time as a guest, Joe Reed.
Joe.
Hey. Joe Reed.
I'm back.
We're so happy.
And he's better
to
than
hear
ever.
You.
Some might say that, in fact, yeah.
Before we get into our lead topic from the corrections department.
Beep, 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 beep. Oh, time for another tar update.
We had a couple of errors, one of which we caught in the mini before it actually went live to the public, which was the title of a stand-up special. But the other one that we totally did not catch was the guest that I cited as my favorite celebrity cameo, Dr. Dre of News Radio. Not Dr. Dre at all. Not even a little. It was Chuck D.
He hasn't even gone to medical school even a little bit.
We don't know that.
He just has a bachelor's degree in, like, pharmacology or something like that.
He doesn't have his own line of headphones, to my knowledge. But anyway,
true.
That was hideously embarrassed, and I apologize to everyone that had to hear it. That was awful. On to our main event. The
as
Winter Olympics.
Yes, they are here, I assume.
I certainly have been reading a lot of tweets about
that. It's going to be an interesting discussion, because there are some of us here who don't care. Some of us here that care a lot. Mm-hmm. We have some user submissions from people that are splitting the difference in interesting ways.
I already saw some controversy on Twitter yesterday from people that were upset with the Pop Culture Happy Hour Olympics episode that the gay members of the panel had little to contribute. It's going to be a very different experience here today.
A very different experience. Internet, if you're looking for the gay guy who is into sports, you found him!
Joe, since you're here, did you have any like late-breaking Super Bowl thoughts that you wanted to just get in here before we started talking about the Olympics?
Well, first of all, back to Dave's thing about not being able to know if the Olympics are on. Dave, don't you notice that all of your favorite NBC shows are not airing new episodes this week?
Is that why Michael J. Fox wasn't on? And Sean Saves the World.
Among other reasons.
That's why they made sure to wrap up Dracula before the Olympics started.
Thank God. Oh, yeah. That was a nail biter.
Also, zero thoughts on the Super Bowl because, oof, that was a dog.
Yeah.
That was a dog of a game. Yeah, it harkened me back to the Super Bowls of my youth where my beloved Buffalo Bills got pasted 4 years in a row. So, yeah, that wasn't great.
So if you follow our Twitter account or our Facebook page, you'll know that sometime last week we had a user send us their super nerdy spreadsheet for
it
the Winter Games schedule.
Muy impressivo.
Yes.
Yes, it won the internet for at least 36 hours,
it really
which is pretty
did.
Good. Pretty good hold rate info. Yeah.
And building off that, we asked people to send us their thoughts on the Olympics. And what we're going to do today is we got a really good submission from Kat Hazard. What we're going to do is we're going to use her submission as the jumping off point for a bunch of sort of mini topics
yes.
around the Olympics. So shall we get into it?
Yes. If you're looking for depth or expertise, you will not find it in this.
I was going to say, call Dick Button. Otherwise.
Yes. Fast forward.
You got us.
Hello, Extra Hot Great. This is Kat Hazard from Seattle, Washington, and I'm submitting my Sochi Winter Olympics viewing guide. I usually find the opening and especially the closing ceremonies really boring. The only cool thing about the opening ceremonies is watching the Parade of Nations to see what each country has chosen as their national sports costume. For example, the United States this year seems to be doing grandpa like cardigans as their theme. It's also fun to sort of quiz each other about the flags, because you can usually see the flag first before you can see the name of the country. So for the geography nerds in your group, it's fun to do that.
Yes, on the flag bit. I can confirm that.
Although they're in alphabetical order, aren't they? So there's
there's so many countries you don't know.
Sure.
Like Angola's also, flag pops up, you're like, I don't know.
Albania?
Yeah. Right. It is my biannual turn to remember where Malta is and where Andorra is on the globe. That's also always fun. Keep your Wikipedia open and handy.
When I was a kid, my absolutely favorite game, and I just wish I still had it, was a game called Match 2, Roman numeral 2. And it was a concentration game. Mm-hmm. And I think they make, you know, where you just have like the spinning tile on the plastic sort of base.
Yeah.
And you just flip it and, you know, you match two and, you know, you go on. Except it was all flags of the world.
Yeah.
And, oh, I love that game. So that was like my big thing with the Olympics was exactly what she's saying. It's like, get all the flags. Obviously, you got the easy ones. Mm-hmm. You know Canada. Yeah. You know the U.S.
Right.
But then you get those weird ones, especially in the summer games where like everybody's there.
You are still really good at flags. I assume it's because of this game.
That was the one thing that kept me in Quiz Up as long as it did. They had a flag category. And I was going gangbusters on that. I believe flag like hobbyists are called the vexillologists, I think.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Of course they have their own name.
They do, yeah.
That she's right about those sweaters. They're like a grandpa sweater had sex with a Christmas sweater. And this is what resulted.
This is really an improvement, though, over the usual Jersey Guido sweatpant, Rocky Balboa Fiesta sweatpant stripes that you're like, wow.
Although
how
I think
low
of those,
is the common denominator?
Right, but I think of those as more, I mean, I guess, I don't know why I think of that, but the sweatsuits I think of as more the Summer Olympic garb.
Yeah,
the sweater is supposed to be more homey.
I did like the parade of sweaters was great and sort of like because like much more than the Summer Olympic garb. There's a lot of like, oh, I would wear that. I would like that. Like, but then you had like Bermuda. I get it. You're Bermuda. The shorts are your thing. But like the black socks pulled up to your knees is. Not great. And then, but then the Cayman Islands had to come and like top them. And it's just like, oh, shorts? We're doing shorts and flip flops.
Oh, no.
And bank accounts.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Canada ones, I think I saw online look pretty good. They're a little bit Charlie Brownish, but it's like a, you know, a toggle coat. Nothing wrong with that. With a stripe around the bottom. That's not zigzaggy like Charlie Brown, but it's still evocative of that. Surprising no one who's listened to this podcast, the Parade of Nations is the part that makes me really emotional because they all look so happy. It's the part that actually, more than anything else, actually, to me, exemplifies what the Olympics are supposed to be about with like putting aside national differences and politics and all that. And like, it really just is about the sport. And when they zoom in on people's faces, like they're so happy, of course they're so happy to be there, but it's like, it's impossible not to be moved.
I totally buy into that Olympic mystique in that moment. I totally agree with you. It's slightly diminished in the Winter Games because one of my favorite things is sort of that country that has like two athletes or one athlete or three.
Yes.
And that's super fun in the Summer Games. In the Winter Games, it's like, it's one athlete, but it's like some American kid with some like grandfather with like Zimbabwe heritage or whatever.
And it's like the World Baseball Classic where like half the American League is playing for Venezuela and you're like, really?
Yeah.
Robert?
Well, exactly. It's like, and the whole opening ceremonies, every 3 seconds, Matt Lauer was like, goes to school in Boulder, Colorado, goes to school in Vermont, goes to school at Columbia. And it's just like, okay.
Yeah.
I do see what you're saying, though, that when I was a kid, the All-Star game was a big deal for that exact same reason, because there was no interleague play. You didn't see those players the rest of the year, and they were so excited to be there and see their own heroes. Like, there's a rule in the baseball All-Star game that each team has to be represented. So oftentimes you have like some rando middle reliever from a small market team like the Royals, who's like the only guy there, and he's so excited to be there with like A-Rod and Jeter and Pujols, and all those guys, and he's, you know, lined up on the baseline with his cap over his heart, like, I made it, Ma. Yeah. I don't know. I like that part.
I don't know if they strictly
the actual game is so boring too.
I'm not sure if they strictly qualify, but I sure would love to see the Vatican, you know, Vatican City in there. Doing something like ski jumping or something like or luge or something like that. That'd be kind of cool.
Seems like the hat. Think of all the
nicknames they would give them, you know, like,
and they enter with the hats.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. I did see a little bit of the opening ceremony and
the Vatican City Papists.
The Russians are not coordinated. All their like sort of marching band esque things, like they were supposed to, there was one point where there was supposed to be a waving Russian flag, you know, and they all had like lights and
And
there's just like one guy who's just like going the wrong way, and there was just, I'm just saying.
Look, they don't
the Chinese have
that's
he's like, from Siberia.
Discipline break. And the means to enforce it and the money to spend on it. And nobody else can compete with that. And I sort of feel like they should just like
go back to totalitarian days.
No, they should just like show some sort of Epcot Pavilion 5-minute reel of their country and just like boom, get into the games.
Yeah, well, I mean, we watched a little bit of it with Jeff and Wendy, friends of the show on Friday, and you know, the snarky jokes were made about that this was a walk through like Russian history and like, oh, this is the part where Stalin killed everyone. I was like, listen, everybody's country would not really stand up to that much scrutiny.
Right.
If you're putting it in a pageant form, everybody's got some bad stuff in their history.
We'd be cutting out Andrew Jackson because I recommend.
Yeah, Jeff and Wendy were like, well, not Canada. We're like, no, Canada too. We screwed over our First Nations people too, so
Canada keeps their shit under wraps better than most because like no one's looking. But yeah,
no one is looking, that is true.
All right, let's move on to
on that note
the events. Yeah. Ixnay on the Canada. All right, one second here.
My favorite events are the long track speed skating, the short track speed skating, ice dancing, and the Nordic combine, which is a cross between ski jumping and cross country skiing.
All right, fave events. I had to look up the Nordic thing because I'm like, that's wrong. It's like I was confusing it with the biathlon, and I'm like,
yeah,
what kind
so
of,
was I.
What kind of
I
crazy-
didn't realize there was a Venn diagram there.
Yeah. ski jumping and cross country skiing. I like to think that it somehow ends in the jump.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's instead of like starting it off, they just go down a big hill at the end when they're really tired and can't really stick the landing.
Has anyone on this show ever done cross country skiing before?
No,
I have.
Nope.
It is miserable.
It is really.
It looks miserable.
It's not fun at all.
No.
It's a good workout.
It's a very good workout.
Yeah.
God, it's fucking exhausting.
Like most good workouts. Oh.
NBC has compensated this year, and maybe it's been previous years and I just didn't watch it, but they have the most excitable announcer for cross-country skiing.
Yeah.
And he's just like screaming and flipping out, and like you get really, really caught up in it, like almost in spite of yourself, even when you realize that it's just like, it's just cross-country skiing. It looks like torture.
Is his name Fott Familton? That dude is caffeinated.
Yeah,
meanwhile,
he really is.
Apparently one of Canada's best hopefuls in snowboarding is this kid, Mark McMorris, who somebody at replied me on Twitter and let me know he is from Regina. I don't know where he learned how to snowboard in Regina.
Regina rhymes with fun.
It's all, yeah.
I feel like I saw like a puff piece on him there at one point where they were like, where they mentioned that he was from Saskatchewan,
yeah,
and they mentioned like how far he had to go to train.
He would have
just
to go
find a slight
really
incline.
Far. Yeah, I don't even, like, is there skiing even in Alberta? I don't even know. There definitely is.
Well, Calgary had a games. Calgary had an Olympics.
Oh, yeah.
Back
right.
when.
All right.
They just build a hill out of mashed potatoes, like in Close Encounters.
Well, this is going to sound like a joke, but there actually is downhill skiing in Saskatchewan, except what you do is, this is 100%
when
true.
I make fun of this, she gets really defensive. She's
but it's
laughing
true.
And giggling now, but she's super serious about it.
No, I know it's ridiculous, but I have the right to make fun of it. You don't. It's a downhill skiing place, but it like a, you know, whatever resort, but it's like you take the ski jump to the top of a valley and then you ski down the valley. There's no hills. Anyway, maybe that's where he learned. Probably not.
My events, I didn't really figure it out until somebody put it in one of the text submissions that we got, but the events that I would gravitate to are the ones with absolute scoring,
yeah,
and not judging. And it's because, I mean, I get that you can watch it for the artistry involved and be happy with that, but not me. I like rules and scoring systems and sticking to it. So that's why I would I think I would gravitate to like the curling and the hockeys and that kind of stuff where
sure.
everybody's
and favorite. The straight speed events.
Right.
Yeah, I like speed skating too for that reason, and also because the wipeouts are spectacular.
Yeah, Nancy submitted, I'll just read her submission because she sent it in text rather than audio. She says her personal first priority is hockey, mm-hmm. though curling is a very close second. We can come back to that. And then I love all the weird stuff like biathlon. Figure skating is okay, and I'm interested to see how the team event will work, but every time I watch it, I have to get into a thing with my husband about whether it's a sport or not. He says no, his scoring is too subjective, so it sounds like Mr. Nancy is on your tip, Dave.
Yeah.
And she also says, I can leave behind the flippy snow events, all the half pipe and whatnot, so it's the first to go when there's more than one thing at a time. So this seems to be...
For sure. With respect to what those dudes do, and ladies, sorry.
Yeah.
Yes. I just... Like, baseball is no longer... Baseball got kicked off, and I realize it's different Olympics, it's in the summer, but some of the stuff that they kick off for these sports that I'm like... But if you trained like on a railing outside your local consolidated high school, I'm not totally sure. And also I saw that Crash Reel documentary earlier this year. Now I kind of can't.
That slope style I got really into watching. I sort of scoffed it off because I'm not like, I don't like the half pipe stuff with snowboarding and all basically the Shaun White sports.
Yeah. But like the TJ Lavin sports.
But like slope style was, had that combination of, just sort of forward momentum, whereas just sort of like you're not going to be able... It's that giant downhill skiing that I also love watching, which is just like, fuck if you're ever going to be able to stop. Just like do something cool.
Wait, is that the one with all the giant bumps where the slope looks like that egg
That's
packing?
The moguls, which I also love for that reason.
Which one is Super G? Is that
Super
a
G is
one?
The thing where it's the big... It's the most widest slalom ever, so it's just sort of like you go like all the way to the right and then all the way to the left, and you're basically like traversing an entire mountain.
Okay.
It's awesome.
I also enjoy that one and the moguls because it's just like oink, 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 oink.
The moguls just looks like hell on your knees. That's all I ever think of.
Yeah.
And I was watching that today and there were some awful wipeouts on that thing where you just like, you hit a ramp wrong and you are just like flailing. It's kind of crazy. And figure skating because I'm a homosexual. I get it. Like, I love figure skating. I absolutely love it.
What is the thing? There's a team event this year?
Yeah, well, what they did, it's sort of similar to gymnastics in that in gymnastics, everybody does their events and it all combines to a team score. So there's a pair, a male solo, a female solo, and an ice dancing pair. And all those scores get combined. And then everybody, because that finished last night, and so now everybody's going to go into their own component events.
Gotcha.
Huh. Shall we move on?
Well, there's a couple of things that I raised. One is, and I throw this open to the group, was the whole thing of the Olympics more fun when summer and winter were in the same year? Your thoughts?
I'll say maybe it was, but I don't think it could be again, because I think we blow it out so much now that, like, there's no way we wouldn't be fatigued for a summer Olympics after blowing out the Winter Olympics like this, like only a few months later.
But people love the Summer Olympics so much. That's why I think it could still work because people are still super psyched for the Summer Olympics.
So the winter would be like an appetizer.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that ties into my question, which was, did we love it more when there was still a Cold War?
Right.
And it was still like the West versus the Soviet Union. And I think it's those two things combined, because it was like every 4 years. And also people kept fucking boycotting and you couldn't get into it.
Yeah.
But it was like, yeah, we're going to kick you. Oh shit. Jimmy Carter says we're not going.
Yeah.
I was mad at him about that until like 2 years ago.
So if I'm reading you,
I know
that we should get Al-Qaeda on this.
Well, but like this year with like political situations and like, I'm having no problem vehemently rooting against Russia this year. And
right.
Like,
oh, me neither.
It's none of the athletes' fault. But like, this is sort of what I kind of like about the Olympics, too, is it's the safest form of jingoism I can allow myself. Where like, ultimately, it's not harming anybody when I get super rah-rah about the Americans in the Olympics.
Yeah.
So like, that's what I'll sort of portion out to myself, is that level of like homerism, jingoism, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Can I ask what other events you might be jingoistic about that you're afraid to let fly with?
Is this
something that, like, while watching tennis, you're carefully restraining yourself?
Well, I feel like in tennis, I sort of I'm an aesthete when it comes to tennis.
Go
I will
on.
Root for, I will root for the hottest guys and then women on their own merits.
Cosign. Yeah.
As their merits
will. Obviously, merit. As the internet will bear out.
Tough yes. luck for Switzerland? Is that where Roger Federer is from?
Yes, exactly.
Swiss, right?
Exactly.
Woo! I knew a thing! Let's move on!
All right.
5 points to Tara.
I'm going to quickly mention a tip that Kat did rather than play the clip, which she says, if you're relatively new to the games or that you're sort of like you're at a kind of middling tolerance rate, mm-hmm. that her tip is a lot of the events have very long preliminary sessions, rounds, so that you can find out when it hits the finals. And she gave curling as an example that mm-hmm. has like 8 days of curling, of which the first five or six are actually qualifiers.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
just, you know, check in on the 9th or the 10th at the end of the set, or rather, you know, that day.
Yes.
And you're good to go.
And of course, consult the crazy ass spreadsheet.
Yes, of course. So let's move on to actual TV coverage talk of the Olympics.
I'm lucky enough to live in Seattle, Washington, where I have access to Canadian broadcast channels as well as U.S. and the myriad cable stations that I have access to. So I get to see a lot of the events that normal U.S. network television doesn't necessarily show.
So most of Canada lives within broadcast range of a U.S. station. We
yes.
all kind of live on the border
yes.
for the most part. So most Canadians have watched the Canadian and the American feed of all the Olympics mm-hmm. that they've been around for. And the coverage is quite different.
Yeah.
Canadians compete.
That's polite.
Well, Canadians compete in everything the U.S. does.
Joe will know this too because he.
But we don't
I know.
Yeah, but we.
I miss it. I miss having my Canadian stations.
Obviously, our medal count's a lot lower, and the number of sports we actually can stand a chance of winning are much lower. So there's a lot of low stakes kind of stuff that I think in Canada they parcel like they'll not necessarily show it just because there's a Canadian in it. They cast their net a lot wider. And you'll see a lot of matchups just because it's an interesting sporting event rather than having to go over here because there's a Canadian going. Whereas traditionally in America, it's America, 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 America coverage.
Yeah.
And you get a lot less of the foreign, you know, Olympic stories.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that. If you got the 5 minute, let's wait for someone to change their bindings sob story.
Well, not
about
only
how this skier was born without a head or whatever the hell.
Not only the pre-packaged stuff, but also just they'll follow somebody. Like if somebody from China was a really good gymnast or whatever, and it was sort of
yeah.
a story, you would get that thread from the start, and they would follow all the things from, you know, that she or he was in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, America has all the Americans, and then like the honestly three or four like sanctioned foreign competitors who like they think there's enough of interest in, and it's like Usain Bolt and Evgeny Plushenko, and like that's about it. Maria Sharapova, who like counts as Russian only during Olympic years.
Yeah, even she's like, I don't speak a word.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah.
How is Johnny Weir doing as a commentator?
I'm obsessed with this Swiss Miss braid. Mm-hmm. I will say that.
Okay.
A for one. I think he's. Okay, I think he sort of has enough practice being an extrovert and being somebody who people have listened to for a while that he's doing all right. He's better than Tara Lipinski.
I was going to ask how Tara was.
I haven't been watching as much of the
pretty.
Figure skating as I'd like to at this point, but like, I think it's fine. I think you still have your A-team of like Scott Hamilton, and he sort of takes up all the oxygen. But I think Johnny Weir's doing okay.
Okay. Did you guys see that The Walking Dead beat the Olympics in the ratings last night?
I didn't, but I'm not entirely surprised.
No, I'm not either. I don't feel like there's a huge overlap with
really?
That.
I don't know.
Yeah. I don't,
I would think
yeah,
it was another dude-ish audience that both would be trying to attract. But I've been surprised at how much all of the other networks are like just clearing the path for the Olympics.
Yeah.
Like really hardly anything is even trying to compete. It's just a lot of reruns.
Yeah.
Yeah, which 20 years ago, okay, that makes sense. DVRs and fun hadn't been invented yet, but now you can go head-to-head with at least some stuff, especially since NBC, you know, their primetime scripted programming is tapped out. So
yeah.
And you would think with so many cable channels out there desperate for attention that somebody would sort of seize the opportunity and just go gangbusters nuts, not only on smart counter-programming, but smart marketing of it.
Yeah, it's like 50-50. Like Comedy Central is still doing originals. My beloved ABC Family, thank God, is still showing its Nice Families back-to-back with Switched at Birth and The Fosters tonight as we record this. But FX is like, they blinked. We got a press release last week that we're like, we're pulling Archer and Chosen and One Justified until after the Olympics, which like that seemed like a late decision.
Yeah.
That's
but
surprising.
Fox isn't blinking, right?
No, Fox is showing originals.
Showing The Following as we record this.
They're showing Almost Human tonight, and the sitcoms will be
well, that's still
tomorrow.
On?
It's still on. And American Idol. So yeah, I think Fox is...
Well, I wonder if they're keeping it all because they don't want to interrupt an American Idol season because once the reality show starts, you don't want to stop it, and so they don't want to abandon American Idol to have it just be that. So.
Right. Yeah. Anyway,
I remember when I recapped American Idol way, way, way back in the day for Television Without Pity, and they would have these like 3 nights a week. 5 hours of weekly programming bonanzas during the Winter Olympics to like make sure that like it was the most crucial juncture, and like we're very afraid that people were gonna lose viewership to the Olympics.
Dear
I don't remember
Mr.
whether they did.
Mr. President, there are too many states nowadays. Please eliminate 3. I am not a crackpot.
I am not a crackpot. I don't understand why Americans, millions of Americans, always complain every Olympics about the fact that NBC or whatever major network has the Olympics. Why people complain about showing the events live. NBC, which has had sort of a stranglehold on showing the Olympics since the 90s, of course, puts all of the events that they think people care about, mostly the events that Americans have a chance of winning a medal in, like figure skating, snowboarding, speed skating, etc. They put those events during the prime time lineup, which, you know, the 7 p.m. to 11 p.m. lineup. I don't have any problem with that. I don't understand what people expect the networks to do. Most of the Olympics happen in other time zones. And so, you know, nobody's going to be up at 2 o'clock in the morning watching figure skater. If people really care that much to watch them live, Olympics.org website shows every event streaming live.
Thank you, Kat. So she is not a crackpot. Deal with it, America.
Yeah, I have a corollary, and I'll just read it out from Emily along the very same similar lines. Dear spoiler phobes, the internet does not control you people. You control the internet. You are your own spoiler police. So if you care that much, stop demanding that it's everyone else's fucking responsibility to manage what you read/see/hear. If some jackass in your place of business jumps into your face and blabs who took gold in snowshoeing after you had announced your request for withholding the outcome, set your DVR appropriately and went on information silence, no radio, no internet, no TV, no news interaction of any sort, then you have my official permission to smack him or her into the next room, but otherwise, shut the fuck up about it. Also, please note that my permission will not hold up in a court of law as license to assault the aforementioned jackass, but you will gain my eternal and esteemed regard.
Offer void in Tennessee.
Yes.
there's a part I couldn't play all of Kat's stuff because it was great, but it's quite long. She mentioned that she had personally gone to Lake Placid and Vancouver Games.
Wow.
And how much she enjoyed it and how much just sort of like, you know, why that was her first experience with the Olympics. And, you know, that's why she likes the Winter Olympics more. I'm going to chalk this up to maybe she has a little bit of, you know, like a... what is it? I forgot the syndrome. What's the syndrome?
Stockholm syndrome.
Thank Stockholm you. Syndrome.
With this whole thing, because you know there is something to be said for watching it in real time, knowing that you're watching it, even just knowing you're watching a sporting event or a live event with other people who are not necessarily beside you. There's something about that, especially when there's you know stakes in it, you know, especially when there's like national pride. And the idea that somehow NBC can't show it live is sort of horseshit to me, because like CBC in Canada, they'll broadcast 4 a.m. or whatever it is, and then they'll rebroadcast it the next afternoon when there's nothing going on live, and package again for primetime. And there's no reason why NBC can't do that. I'm sure the affiliates would be, sure, we'd love to do it. You know, like 4 a.m. Local Olympic advertising probably pays more than the infomercial they've been running.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, or whatever court show. No, yeah. I agree with that. I mean, whatever. My feelings about spoiler phobia are well documented. I won't repeat them. I'm a spoiler phobia phobe. But I also think that in this day and age, you have to be a little bit more realistic about, like, if you are only going to watch things in the primetime package,
yeah,
going to get spoiled for major stuff unless you stay off the internet, which is your option. But don't, you know, get off the cross. We need to skis.
I mean, it's no doubt a conundrum, because, I mean, it's not like these things aren't live. The big events are all generally in the whatever evening time in Sochi, which is during your work day here. Right. So, like, not like people don't generally have the option to watch live then. So it's like, I feel for people. I mean, one of the things we're doing at The Wire is, we're not putting spoilers in headlines. We're not putting spoilers in tweets. And like, that's basically the least we can do. But it's an imperfect system. I generally, like, I feel for you if you're, you know, annoyed that you got spoiled by a thing. It's not really avoidable, but it's a bummer. And I feel like we've yet to crack the perfect system. And I somewhat get what NBC's doing, where they're like, they somehow have this false belief that, like, if people can watch it earlier, they won't watch it at night. But, like, those are two separate audiences, basically. Like, the amount of people who are sort of keeping themselves monastic to watch it at night,
right,
are the people who generally wouldn't stumble upon those things normally anyway. Like, I feel like the people who are, like, walling themselves off from an internet that they actively engage with every day during the day is not that big of a percentage.
Well, and NBC also has a stable of channels that is huge. MSNBC, CNBC, the Universal Channel.
They've been using the NBC Sports Network pretty well, and I think they're still not showing the events that they will be showing in prime time. They'll show other events, which is fine.
But it's true, they do have a million channels, and I feel like in other years they would spread it out more. They would have more live stuff on more channels. Like, I remember, I remember seeing yeah, stuff on USA and whatever else. I mean,
well, and it depends on where it is too. Where was the last winter one?
Vancouver.
Okay. So, but there was one that I guess was like across the international dateline practically, and they really just had to be like, okay.
Yeah. Torino? Was that the last one before Vancouver?
Torino was Nagano? The one before Vancouver. Nagano was 98. Yeah. And next year, next Winter Olympics is in Pyeongchang, South Korea. So that'll be like that again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You do what you got to do, I guess.
Yeah.
All right. So to wrap it up, a couple thoughts from Kat to round this up. A little tip for the summer game people.
One other thing for summer Olympics fans that don't usually care about Winter Olympics, Lolo Jones is in the bobsleigh this year, trying to finally get an Olympic medal, any Olympic medal that she can. And so keep a lookout for Lolo Jones in the bobsleigh. I love you guys. Keep up the good work. Thanks.
That's fun.
Bobsleigh. Bobsleigh is a cute word.
She's who's the guy, Joe, from the early 90s? I'm going to guess who was like trying to get in every sport. Bo something?
Bo Jackson. Yes.
Yeah. Modern day Bo Jackson.
Exactly.
Any other closing thoughts on the Winter Olympics before we move on?
Go America.
That's right. Go America.
I mean, USA. That's what you're supposed to say, right?
Yes. As you noticed, our athletes, they were chanting USA, USA as they walked out into the... And be nice to gay people, fucking Russia. Jesus fucking Christ.
And dogs.
And dogs, yes.
Gay dogs. Exactly.
And gay
and
dogs.
And gay dogs most of all.
All right, it's time for Around the Dial. Tara, what do you got for us?
Sarah, take a break. We're going to talk about Justified for a minute. Holy shit, that last episode of Justified was so good.
It was.
Yeah.
Oh, fucking Art. That was so much fun getting to see Art in the waning days of his career, getting to channel his inner Raylan Givens.
Character showcase episode, if ever
really
there was.
I love the annual Art episode. It always delivers.
He was delightful. Alan Tudyk was great.
Yeah.
Everything about that episode was like shocking and surprising and fun and crazy. And it's really been a very good season so far. I'm very happy with season 5.
And my darling Ava, I knew something was going to happen. You don't cast fucking Danny Strong without having him ruin everything for everybody.
It's true. It really is. That guy is just, he's plot poison.
The only thing that's missing with him is they should have given him a shitty mustache. That would have really clinched his character. But what I mostly want to talk about is use my space to advocate for Broad City.
Yeah.
Such an awesome, amazing comedy. I feel like it's not, I don't know that it's under the radar exactly, but I feel like after the original like flurry of coverage, it sort of fell off. Maybe people think it's a sketch show. Not that there's anything wrong with a sketch show. It's not.
It's also new territory for Comedy Central.
It's very different from past Comedy Central stuff.
Among the people that frequent Comedy Central historically is a tough sell.
Well, especially because it's back to back with Workaholics, which is kind of a different
show. Yeah.
But it's so, so, so funny. Each episode has been better than the last. I did a post about this last week, but there's a long sequence of one of the characters going to pick up a package at a distribution center.
It was so good.
We've all
been there.
Oh my God. It's a pain in the ass wherever you are, but like it's so much worse in New York because most of the time you don't, unlike Sarah, you don't have a car and it's like takes forever and a day to get there. And like the way they put it, like, no, you just take the bus to the end of the line and then there's the water taxi and then they show her walking on this like post-nuclear landscape, finding a stick in the ground with like Costco this way, SHPP.
Scrawled on it.
And then she finally gets there. She's like gone into the past. There's a kid out front playing with a hoop and stick. Everything about it was perfect. Please watch Broad City. I will cry so hard if it doesn't come back for a second season. And it's so, so funny and so smart and so good. Broad City, much, much, much better than the similar girls.
Agreed.
And Sarah.
Oh, Biggest Loser. I will lead off by saying that I actually knew that Lolo Jones thing because she and some other Olympic athletes were, I don't know why, I don't know how they were blackmailed into appearing on The Biggest Loser. When the show went to the Olympic training facility in Salt Lake City. But Biggest Loser ended last week. Rachel Fredrickson won. She was down to 105 pounds. The last time we saw her, she weighed like 135. She looked great. She was like a size 6. She looked very healthy and strong. She comes out 30 pounds later, having been at home, and looked disastrous, and this was a big topic around the internet, whether they'd gone too far with it and the trainers' reactions. And I have to say, I watched The Biggest Loser, and it's like, it is exciting to see these dramatic drops in weight. And you do get to a point in the season where like the cult speak about like, I finally love me. They're like, oh my God, just get to the weigh-in. Like, it's a very long sit after a while, and you're just waiting to get to the end. But I feel like they have to revamp the show so that it's the win is based on a different metric besides like the biggest percentage of weight loss, because it's getting really scary. Like, of the three finalists, two of them looked actively unwell, and she just had the big, and I really don't like calling out women on TV for being too thin, because I think the pressures on like, especially actresses to be crazy thin and have like the long hair extensions, whatever else, that, you know, it's not easy, and I'm not judging anyone, but for a show like this to
can judge the show.
And especially since they're like, this is about having a healthy, fit lifestyle and saving your life and second chances. And I'm like, well, what's her third chance?
Yeah. Well, yeah, you're not supposed
electrolyte
to,
imbalance.
Right. You're not supposed to lose 60% of your body weight in however many weeks it was. I mean, whatever number of weeks or months it was too short for that crazy amount of weight loss. And like, she didn't look right. And it shouldn't be about how you look anyway. Like, it should be about your health. And the fact that it has to be this thing where you step out in the tight top and the bike shorts and the flip flops. It's like, okay, we can see everything. We get it. Like, this isn't the doctor's office. We don't need to see every introvert right. to confirm that she has lost weight. But
well, and whatever she was wearing, it was her arms that I was just like, I do not have big hands that I could easily have gotten my hand around her upper arm.
And her face, just, like when she smiled, it was like there's not enough face around that smile.
No, she's 24.
Yeah.
She looked my age. It's not good. I'm not 24. So yeah, I think The Biggest Loser needs to figure something else out with like BMI or ability to run a marathon in the fastest time or something else that's about relative fitness and not how scrawny did these people get. I recognize that there will be a bounce back and they'll be back up to a more appropriate weight soon enough now that the prize is out of the equation. But it's not safe and it's irresponsible for a, I mean, not that The Biggest Loser is a public trust, whatever.
No, but that's how it presents itself as like something.
Thumbs down.
Remaking people's lives to be more healthy, and it's not that. And Sarah is 22 and a half.
Joe, round the dial with Joe. Hello?
So we mentioned Michael J. Fox a little bit earlier. His Michael J. Fox show is has now been shelved by NBC, and it was announced today that he will be taking that time now to go to The Good Wife and back to his recurring role on The Good Wife. So he will be on later this season, which is good because that guest actor Emmy wasn't going to win itself. but also my hope is that with Michael J. Fox going there, the guest actor budget now will be a little bit skimpier for Jason O'Mara's terrible, awful character.
Oh, God, that guy.
Leave and die.
Ten up top. Word.
I won't even bring Melissa George into this because, Tara, I thought you made a decent case for her for her last few episodes. And that storyline is now getting interesting enough that I don't begrudge her very existence like I did early in the season. I believe I was saying that Tara had semi-sold me on the usefulness of Melissa George's Marilyn Garbanza on The Good Wife, but I am not at all sold on Irish mob enforcer, lawyer, street tough guy, whatever. I could do without him at any time. He's basically the only thing about The Good Wife right now that isn't working for me, so...
All right. I'm going to talk a little bit about Face Off. I mentioned a few episodes ago that it seemed like maybe a reality show that was most likely to please Dave. Mm-hmm. And we gave it a couple episode tests, and it's not bad. It's a show about special effects artists making masks and costumes based on kind of similar challenges. You know, basically every week it's like make a dragon or make an alien.
A lot of creatures.
Yeah, a lot of creature effects. But the reason I like it is that it's actually almost fat-free when it comes to like the social dynamic stuff. And it's really task and work-based from the participants to the judging.
Mm-hmm.
Everything seems to be on message that this is a show about the product that they make.
Well, the other thing is what makes it good is I think the judges aren't really trying to be discovered. You know what I mean? There's no Kelly Wurstler or something trying to be such a personality. By the way, I drove past when I go to the gym, I drive up La Cienega and pass a building that her studio shares with Sally Hershberger's studio. So
of course,
just imagine
the Bravo
alternate
Nexus
universe. I know it's crazy to think about. But anyway, the main person that comes in as the mentor is an actual, like, I assume by now retired because he's an older gentleman, but a special effects makeup guy.
The father
and
of the host.
Yeah, his daughter is the host of the show. And so it's sort of cute when she's like, and there's your challenge and I'll be back in a few hours with my dad. Like, it's cute. But he's also like, he knows his shit and he's not trying to like spray you with all his amazing charisma. He's just like, here's what you should actually, exactly. Here's what you should do to make your product better.
I believe that was mentioned as a, by our esteemed colleague Monty Ashley as a show that our readers should get on board with last year.
Yes,
so
you are correct.
You are encouraged to look that up and believe in Monty's teachings.
Dear Mr. President, there are too many states nowadays. Please eliminate three. I am not a crackpot.
I am not a crackpot, but I call shenanigans on H&R Block. for one ad in particular, now that it's about to be tax season, or is, they have an ad called, part of their campaign this year is Get Your Billion Back, the premise being when Americans do their own taxes, they don't get as much of a refund as they should. And I have noticed that when we fast forward commercials, as one does during a DVR, a lot of times the fast forwarding gets stalled on this ad. Perhaps you've heard it. It shows a guy at some kind of sports stadium putting money on the seats.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, but it's stalled.
Two of my favorite things, baseball stadiums and money.
But it's happened at least three different times where it stalls in the middle of fast forwarding, and it's always that ad. And I think there might be some kind of coding or something in it that makes it stop your DVR, so you actually have to pay attention to that ad. The only other ad it does that with is a scrubbing bubbles ad that's also happened more than once with that. So it may be that our DVR just has some weird mojo with it, but I suspect there's some kind of
dark magic
special ad buy happening. Dark magic, like I said.
The common denominator between H&R Block and Scrubbing Bubbles is they're both run by the Freemasons. All right, it's time for the canon. And as always, we let our guests submit something to the canon. And Joe, as first-time guest to the podcast, what do you got for us?
Well, as you probably expected, I'm here with all of the other episodes of The West Wing that I have not previously submitted. So, no. I learned my lesson. I am here with one of my favorite episodes of television of all time, from one of my favorite shows of all time, My So-Called Life. The dearly departed mid-90s relic, My So-Called Life. Season 1, only season, episode 10, called Other People's Mothers. This is the one, if you sort of remember the show, this is the one that prominently features Rand's mom. If the Our Town episode, if you remember when on the original incarnation of the show, when Mark Blankenship presented the episode that dealt with the production of Our Town, from My So-Called Life, if that was the ideal Mark episode, this one is kind of mine, because I'm as fascinated by Rayanne Graff and her mother as Angela is in this episode, and I really, really was back when I was 14 years old and watching this. It's an interesting episode because it focuses really kind of tightly on some of the characters and not others. There's no Jordan Catalano in this episode at all. There's no Brian Krakow. Even my beloved Sharon Chersky only has like a scene and a half. One where she's in the ladies' room and one where she's sort of sneering at Rayanne while wearing her boyfriend's Letterman jacket, as she kind of always was. As the title of the episode suggests, this is an episode about daughters and their mothers. Angela's mom, Patty, has spent the whole season up till now being some level or other of uncomfortable or concerned about Angela and her strange new circle of friends, Rayanne and Ricky. This episode adds a few more angles in Rayanne's permissive hippie mother, Amber, played by Patty Darbinville, played fantastically by Patty Darbinville, as well as Patty's mother, Vivian. As tends to happen, meeting people's mothers gives you a good bit of insight into the characters and where they're coming from. So the episode. Early on, Rayanne, Ricky, and Angela are raiding the Chase fridge for snacks, and Rayanne grabs a beer, a Miller Genuine Draft, I managed to note, which, classy kids. But when Patty returns home with Danielle, fucking Danielle, it's Ricky who's carrying the beer upstairs for Rayanne, and he's the one who gets caught. And he gets the silent, judgy blame from Angela's mom, who is already sort of wary of Ricky at this point anyway because of his sort of otherness. He dresses weird, and he's super gay and whatever. So there's this scene.
Now she hates me.
So? She never liked you that much to start off with.
No, but now she really hates me.
Look, do you think it's possible to please that woman? Do you think she'd actually give anyone a break? I mean, have you seen her vegetable bin? I rest my case.
There's also, just before that part, there's this fantastic line from Danielle, which she's almost always the worst character, but in this incredibly believable little sister way, where she's always trying to, like, ape Angela's moody teen angst routine, but, like, from just an I see it and I'll imitate it kind of way. So this is when Patty just enters the house and they see Ricky with the beer and the other two.
Drinking a beer at 4:30.
Danielle, go play outside.
Mom, it's not fair. My life is totally edited.
My life is totally edited. Like, oh, it's perfect. So Patty has her own problems to deal with in this episode. Her dad is in the hospital, and he's fine, but he's going to be in the hospital for like a day or so, which means the plans for her parents' anniversary party this weekend are in flux. And so here's where we meet Patty's mom, a hurricane of passive aggression, who maneuvers Patty to host the party at her house instead of this fondue place they were going to go to. And she convinces Patty to have Graham cook up a fat-free menu of skinless chicken, which offends Graham on a deep level. And she keeps arranging the damn candlesticks is the other thing that Patty can't deal with. So meanwhile, Angela gets invited over to Rayanne's crystal palace of an apartment and meets Amber, Rayanne's mom, who immediately makes a huge fucking deal over Angela and sort of runs up to her and hugs her. And she's drinking a margarita and she's reading tarot cards and she says things about how life should be lived. And Angela is absolutely enthralled.
Happy birthday and maybe more, Dad.
I know, I saw that. He meant many more.
He wrote, and maybe more.
Hi, sweet cakes.
Mm. Oh, my God! Is that her?
Yes.
Angela, come to Mama.
I finally face the truth. The only really great foods are appetizers and desserts, so why bother eating anything else?
Amber, you're so up, even though you're surrounded by negativity.
She's an x-ray technician. It's not as glamorous as it sounds. What can I tell you, sweet cakes? Life was created to be lived.
I quote that appetizers thing weekly.
Well, first of all, that line, too, reminds me, of course, of one of my favorite movies, which is Mermaids, where Cher's character, Mrs. Flax, would only serve finger foods and appetizers, and that was the only thing. So she would be like marshmallow kebabs for Christmas.
Oh, God.
Yeah, so that already endears me. Amber's one of the great side characters on the show, I find. Perfectly realized, permissive mom who drives Patty crazy whenever Patty encounters her because she's decidedly not the fun mom. She's incredibly jealous in this episode that Angela seems to have this great sort of rapport with Amber, and she's sort of very loving and comes home with the tarot cards and immediately like starts like reading Danielle's fortune or whatever. Meanwhile, newsflash, Rayanne is a mess, probably more so in this episode than normal. She got an envelope of cash from her absentee dad, and obviously she doesn't know how to process that emotionally, so instead she gets drunk before school and literally starts throwing the money around the girls' bathroom, all the while Ricky is looking incredibly concerned and trying very hard to keep her together and pick her up after pretty much constantly looking on the edge of a breakdown at all times. And this is when Rayanne gets the brilliant idea to throw a party with this money.
Ricky, you're brilliant. A party!
Like an event. Like the memory I'll have for the rest of my life.
Like Tino's party?
Only endless! Like infinity, where so much is going on at every second that there's no possibility for your mind to wander, and you become this prisoner of, like, happiness.
Yeah! All the while she's saying this, by the way, she's wearing this, like, floor-length flannel shirt that's maybe a robe, like, over her rest of her
outfit. It is a robe. I am positive it's a robe.
It's all of the 90s in one clothing choice. It's amazing.
Such,
oh my God.
90s clothing in this episode. Any given frame.
Yep.
That really is any what character, was happening. Including
pale jeans.
Woo! 90s adults wore.
So Rayanne invites everybody to this party. Once again, we don't see Tino. We never see Tino. I like that his name was mentioned in that clip, by the way, because of course.
Yeah, me too.
She rages for booze and drugs and everything, and Ricky frets as she's doing all of this. But meanwhile, Angela has this party for her grandparents' anniversary on the exact same night. And she, of course, tries to weasel out of her family obligations, but Patty is not budging.
Why can't I just go to Rand's party?
Because I need you here.
The only reason you're having it here is because Grandma
that
talked you into it.
That is not true.
You know, the karma in this house is, like, ridiculous.
Really?
Yeah, it's really low, dark, whatever it is that happens to karma.
And I'll bet the karma at Amber's house is just through the damn roof.
It's such a cliche, but it's so true that watching this show now, you're so very much on Patty's side of everything. And like watching, as opposed to watching this when I was a teenager, which is when I first saw it. But like, God, like the show manages to sort of give each character their moment. But like that thing where it's just the karma in this house is really low or dark. Like, God damn it, Angela. So Angela can go help Rand set up for the party, but she can't go to the party. So she goes to help set up, and that's when Amber gives the classic, better you drink under my roof, but don't go crazy, sort of permissive parent line. And then she goes to work. And Angela goes back home to mope through her grandparents' party, where Patty is even maybe in a worse mood because her dad doesn't even come to the party. So this is like, why the fuck am I having this thing anyway? And her mom is being such a diva and trying to put oregano in the curry sauce. God damn it, Vivian. Yeah.
Good running gag with that, too.
Yeah, that was really... That, the end.
Tastes Italian.
Tastes Italian. That's, you know, it's oregano. It's the universal herb, she said. What the fuck? So Rayanne's party is crazy, or at least Rayanne is at her party. Drinking, doing pills, which because it's the 90s is obviously ecstasy, because it's always ecstasy in the 90s. By the time Angela blows off her family party and with passive-aggressive grandma's permission goes to Rayanne's, things are pretty dire. Amber shows up not too long after and is super pissed and kicks everybody out. And we sort of see the dark side of permissive mom, where now she's yelling at Rayanne for looking like an old drunk. And as she's getting changed for her date, so she's like in the house and out of the house and leaves Rayanne really worse for wear. And they do that sort of like really melodramatic TV thing where Rayanne's like, it's cold, I'm so cold, and you know something's wrong. So Ricky and Angela really freak out, and Ricky doesn't know what to do, and Angela does because she has her mom that she can call, which is like shockingly the most responsible thing that anybody's done in this episode. So she calls Patty, and she says, Mommy, I need help, and Patty comes running, and she shows up, she springs into action, she calls the paramedics, she figures out the pill situation, she's awesome. And so we cut to the hospital, and Angela's off getting snacks, so it's just Ricky and Patty in the waiting room, and we really see the toll that all of this is taking care of Rayanne has been taking on Ricky, and for the first time, Patty sees it too.
Did you ever try to protect someone so much that it like hurt?
That wasn't your beer the other day, was it?
So that scene makes me cry for a billion reasons, both because it's Ricky and Patty, but also I love it because it's like the perfect My So-Called Life like elocution, where it's have you ever, you know, so much that it, you know, like hurt, because the sentence structure is always like that. So Rand's gonna be fine, and Amber comes in and freaks out and is very dramatic, and you sort of see a resolution, but it's not like anybody changes too much. Finally, Patty invites Ricky back to, as we heard at the beginning of the show, a very dull party. And then they send Ricky in to go to the party ahead of them, which I feel like is almost a traumatic situation in its own that never gets taken care of, where like Ricky is in this party full of people he doesn't know, but that doesn't matter.
Because Patty and Angela are having
What's that?
I said he seems to roll with it. It's like this is a different kind of experience that he wants to try. Like, what if I was normal, you know? What if I was in a normal family?
He and Graham always had sort of a compadres vibe. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
I never worried about that for some reason, and I've obsessed over the show like, whoa. Anyway, sorry.
But the important part is that Patty and Angela have this very lovely sort of talk in the car about trust and responsibility. And it's like, it's a responsible mom talk that in a lesser show would have come off very talking point-ish, I think. But I think this show handles it very realistically, and their interaction is always so on point, I think, with those two characters. And then Angela goes in, and then Patty just straight up cries alone in her car, which also feels very real, I think. And at the end, Angela gets her little sort of voiceover at the end, and you pan across all the characters, and it's very kind of heartwarming, but not, again, not too saccharine, I think, is probably the word I'm looking for. The whole episode is just great. It deals with my favorite relationship on the show, which is Angela and her mom. The thing with Rayanne's mom feels so true to life. All the stuff with Patty's mom is hilarious to me, the way she's driving Graham crazy, especially. The way that other people kind of ship romantic relationships on shows is the way I mom ship Patty and Ricky. where this episode, and then it's also why I really give a break to So-Called Angels, the Christmas one.
Oh my god, yes.
Because they have a scene in that one, too, that just, like, kills me.
That,
like,
hug.
I know.
Don't even talk about it. I'm going to start crying.
I know. So that's why I have such a soft spot. This episode manages to have that kind of a moment, but also is great overall. I think it's kind of all of the best, even without Jordan and without Krakow and without Darling Sharon. It's my favorite, I think, of the entire series. So that's the episode. You guys go.
Sarah should go first.
Oh, gosh. Really? Okay. Yes. I was thrilled to rewatch this episode. I hadn't seen it in a while. And I can't believe the show is 20 years old. Almost. I think it debuted August of 94. I can't believe how easy it was for me to switch from Claire Danes' Homeland mode back to Claire Danes' My So-Called Life mode. I can't believe how well most of these episodes still hold up. Like, the whole sequence that you clipped when she's meeting Amber, and, like, my mom was Patty, like, squared, cubed. And actually, I had moved back home after college, and we would watch this en famille, which was super awkward, and we would fucking get in regular fights about it, because my brother was Angela's age at the time.
Yeah.
And was much cooler than I had been. And I think my parents were a little more permissive with him because he was like, whatever, he was a boy and older for his grade and whatever else. And and the second kid. And there would just be, like, the credits would roll and just, like, charged debate would break out. But I absolutely had a friend who had a mom. I had a Rayanne. She had an Amber, and that feeling of, like, being famous to this grown-up, they're so spot on about that. They're so spot on about how one of the things I love about the show is that it acknowledges that everyone can be shitty. Like, it loves Angela, but it knows that a lot of the time she's just a shitty teenager, but yeah. It also knows when Patty's being shitty. Patty's such a badass in this episode, and the story about her college roommate, and just, I actually don't like that ending voiceover, but I do like that when she's talking about the cards and she talks about strength.
Yeah.
She shows Patty, and I don't know. I think this episode is really, really smart about mother-daughter relationships and how many different relationships are in one mother-daughter relationship.
Yeah.
And the other clip of Through the Damn Roof was such a Barb moment. Like,
Barb my is brother, your
it
mom.
Was not. Yes, it was not possible to pause back in the day, but at the next commercial, my brother and I were like, oh my god, they had a camera in the house, that's totally you! Just like, I don't know what you're talking about, like, totally the same tone, we're like, oh my god, you have the same hair as Bess Armstrong, it is you, what are you talking about? I love this episode. Parts of it are very hard to watch, not because of the 90s fashions, although that's not helping, but just because it does hold up. It's not dated. All these issues are the same in relationships with your mom, no matter how old you are. And I don't know. Great episode. I'm thrilled that we got to watch it again. Dave?
What was the other episode that we did on this?
The one Joe mentioned, the R-Town, the play.
Betrayal, probably?
The Betrayal, yeah.
Right.
Second to last?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What this show does, and I didn't really kind of realize it until this episode, and I'm not quite sure if it's a conscious decision on, or it's just the times in which it was made, but it's a really interesting synthesis of after-school special and family drama that manages to keep it out of camp.
Yeah.
And that's an interesting mix of ingredients without, you know, and it kind of turns out well, whereas I think most productions would sort of bend under the weight of, you know, the capital S special episodes. And
well, there was definitely lots of 90210 episodes that were about, like, the good mom versus the terrible,
right? Kelly's mom,
messy,
single
mom. Yeah, Kelly's mom,
coked
for sure.
Up and Jackie, that, announcing the fashion show.
Oh, God, and My So-Called Life also did a mother daughter fashion show episode too. But
that's right.
Oh, that's it.
Which is another amazing one. But yeah, that was definitely a soap, and this is a drama. Yeah.
And it's a testament to Claire Danes and the actress who plays the mother.
Bess Armstrong.
Bess Armstrong.
That you know, they can carry the family portion of the storyline, because a lot of the other actors are kind of not so great. I'm not quite sure if Rianne, my reaction to Rianne at the end of the day is right, that I find her annoying, but I'm not quite sure whether I find her annoying because that's the way she's written or that's the way she's acted.
I think it's both.
I think it's probably both. And this is the episode that amps that up more than anything.
Is it? Yeah. Okay. So it was kind of cartoony. But I felt like that's the way I was supposed to feel about that character, whether they got to it, you know, with the most direct way, the most efficient way, or the most artful way. I can't really say, but it was interesting that my reaction was like, oh man, that actor is really hamming it up. I really hate the character for that actor's portrayal of it. But I enjoyed it. Tara?
Yeah, I think she has the burden, the character and the actor, of being like, she has to be so charismatic and that you would believe that Angela would be attracted to her and think, mm-hmm. like, if I'm friends with her, I'm going to be a different kind of person. Because that's sort of what the show is about like Angela trying out a different way of being. It's sort of like Lindsay on Freaks and Geeks is a similar
but,
sort of like.
I mean, to bring it back right. to the act, she was like the most after schooly special-y thing
for sure.
about it. Like, she was one step away from, you know, the girl on top of the 3-story warehouse in LA who thinks she could fly.
Yeah. It's a bit of an overwritten part. Yeah. And the moments where she was like, she gets this money and then she says to her mother in a private moment, like, I think I don't want to keep this money. And her mother's like, that's ridiculous. And then she sort of is like, all right, I guess I'm keeping the money and this is what I'm doing with it to show how little it means to me, you know? Yeah. Like, that has to be her storyline. But anyway, I, of course, love this episode too. I think the addition of Patty's mother is brilliant because it shows that Patty is like, it just shows those three characters in balance. Like, Patty is a version of that mom, but she's like the nicer, earthier version. You sort of think like, okay, maybe each generation is going to get it a little bit more right. That obviously a lot of what bugs Patty about her mother is the stuff that she sees in herself, as we all are with all our mothers, if I may.
You may.
My mother was Patty also. And and so I think the stuff that Angela and Patty get to do in this episode in particular is great, because it lets you see the difference between Angela and Rayanne, primarily in terms of not all the surface differences, but that Angela is safe and Rayanne is not safe. And so that's what the main crisis of the episode is about. Go ahead, Dave.
Sorry to speak out of turn, but I just remember the other thing I wanted to say. Special shout out to the tattoo artist who's just trying to make a living, man.
Oh, yeah.
I think that may have been a famous, like a semi-famous grunge musician.
Oh, maybe.
My fellow, my so-called life listies will kill me for not knowing this, but I'm pretty sure that's someone that back then you would have known who it was and now is like has a gravel spreading business or whatever. Much like, I think AJ Langer like married some prince, like literally Grace Kelly'd it and lives in Italy or some shit like that.
Good for her.
Yeah.
Yes. Good for her.
Pays better.
Yeah.
But yeah, this episode is almost perfect in every way. I agree with Dave's comments about Rianne, that I always found her a little bit overwritten, and that she, because she was a try-hard character, she had try-hard tendencies, and that can be annoying for all the reasons. But I also think that the experience of watching My So-Called Life as you get older, it's like the three ages of My So-Called Life. You know what I mean? Like when you're when you watch it when it was first on. I mean, Joe, you're a lot younger than we are, but you know, I was in college, and so I could recognize a lot of those, like, the Angela tendencies, and especially having been a very Angela kid, minus the rebellion. And then now, you know, I am Patty still. Yeah. I am Patty now. And I don't know, I guess if I watch it 20 more years from now, I will be Tino, disappeared and forgotten.
Or the Chase's cat.
Or
never
the
forgotten.
Chase's cat. But anyway, yes, the mother-daughter episodes and the mother-daughter relationship between Angela and Patty, I don't know if it's true that it's always been my favorite, but certainly at this point in my life, it's what I look forward to seeing the most when I watch this show. So it was an excellent choice, Joe.
All right.
Thank you.
So, Tara, that sounds like a yes vote?
It is a yes vote.
And Sarah?
That's a yay for me.
And I'm going to say yay as well, so it's 3-for-3.
Hey.
You know what that means.
Nice.
Thanks.
My So-Called Life, Season 1, Episode 10, Other People's Mothers. You are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Great Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope. All right, it's time for winner and a loser of the week. Tara, you have our winner.
Winner is House of Cards, which got renewed for a third season before season two has even been dropped on us. I imagine the reason is that there's a lot of movie stars in it and they want to lock people up before they start moving on to other fancier, more Oscar-begging-y stuff. But whatever the reason, yay, I enjoy House of Cards. I'm glad there will be more of it. And I should also add, I talked Sarah into watching season one of House of Cards, so we will probably be talking about season two very soon, if not in the next podcast, in a podcast not long from now.
Woo!
And loser of the week?
Jay Leno. I'm not going to elaborate. I don't feel I need to. There's something about him that's pathetic in a way that makes me resent him.
Yeah.
I think it's the 48 gazillion vintage sports cars accompanied by the boo-hooing on 60 Minutes.
Yeah.
I don't know. Stay gone this time.
He does have it tough.
His last episodes got much lower ratings than Conan O'Brien's last episodes of The Tonight Show got. Admittedly, those were under a cloud of scandal and excitement that
right.
Whereas Jay Leno just sort of petered out, but still. Yes.
That brings up an interesting question, which is this.
Yes.
Do you know what time it is?
Scandal and excitement time?
No. It's game time.
Could be. Oh. They're not mutually exclusive.
Hey, why don't you look at all my vintage cars?
That was a
I usually
A+
love it when you sing, Dave.
Jay Leno impression.
I know. I worked on it so hard. All right, guys. This is the sixth game time of this season. Tara has 4 points, putting her one win away from the season title. Hmm. Sarah has 1 point, and the guests have yet to put a point on the board.
Curious timing that this should be the one that Joe came back for.
I'm fighting for you, guests. I'm fighting for everybody.
All right.
We're all fighting against Tara. That's the important thing.
That's fine.
Everybody united against Tara is the theme of this week's game time.
Chuck D.
All right. Today we are going to play.
Yay!
Oh, no. Hate potato.
Oh,
that's
no.
Right. It's time for hot
Get
potato.
Okay.
You should be aware how to play, but if not, it's pretty simple. I am going to read you a category, and you guys will take turns naming items from that category until there is one last person standing, or in rare instances, everything is named from that category, in which case, no point is awarded.
Okay.
All right. So let's go see who will be first. Picky, take it away.
We will start with valued guests.
All right. So Joe is going to go first. Then we'll go to Sarah. And then to Tara. We have 10 categories for you today.
Oh, fuck.
Are we ready to play Hot Potato?
Yes.
Yes.
Hot potato,
no.
Hot
potato,
hot potato, hot potato,
hot potato, hot potato, hot potato. All right, Hot Potato number one. Earning himself an extra credit, Monty Ashley starts us off with games from Hollywood Game Night with a total of 19 entries. 19 entries. Games from Hollywood Game Night. Take it away, Joe.
My nemesis, Lil Picasso.
I knew you were going to say that.
Lil Picasso is correct. To Sarah.
I only read Tara's recaps. Word search? Benson.
All right, so Sarah's out of it, so we're just on to a Joe-Tara match. Tara?
Why I love a charade.
Do the do's?
Smash the buzzer.
So we have to give, like, the proper name for these.
That's
we can't
right.
just describe it.
Okay. I will be a little generous in the wording of it, if you get it mostly right.
Oh, shit. Clue explosion. Is there something that's kind of like that with the bowl?
Clue boom.
Clue boom.
Clue boom. Ah!
Yes, yes. All right, so first point goes to Tara. All right.
It's a little unfair since I do recap the show, but whatever. Moving on.
I want to point out that these are mostly user submissions. So, you know, some of them are going to favor some people, some will favor other people.
Fair enough.
All right.
I blame you, Monty.
Number two, our lowest itemed category of this game, with only four entries.
Whoa. Oh, Jesus.
Celebrities who have starred in proactive commercials.
Oh.
So, Joe, you're first.
Julianne Hough. No!
She has.
She has starred?
She has.
Okay, sorry. Yeah.
So now
okay.
Five.
Sarah, it's now five.
God, what's his name? Adam Levine.
Katy Perry. Dang.
One left. So, Joe, you can just name it. Nobody's, okay. Nobody's getting this point.
Zac Efron?
Avril Levine. Avril Levine. Okay, so no points awarded because we did not That's get right. down to one last person. So, third hot potato category. Gaetano 131 earns himself, or perhaps herself, an extra credit for this category, and this is a good one. Primetime scripted dramas and comedies that ran 10 seasons or more since 1970.
Whoa!
Okay. So basically, real TV shows that had 10 seasons.
Not 60 minutes.
Exactly.
Okay.
29 shows have done this. So we'll keep the order. So Joe is first.
Law and Order, Mothership.
And to Sarah.
Law and Order, SUV.
NYPD Blue.
ER.
Good one.
Nice. My mind is now emptied of shows. It's amazing. Friends?
Frasier?
NCIS?
Nice.
Cheers.
Two and a Half Men.
Jesus.
Two and a Half. That was Two and a Half Men.
Back to Joe.
The Simpsons.
Oh, nice.
L.A. Law? Yeah.
Ooh. All right.
I just fell down an elevator shaft.
Family Guy?
Wow, really?
Yeah, I was
it got canceled and then it came back.
Yeah. Oh, geez. Cheers?
Already been said.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a problem then, isn't it?
Unless you're referring to another show called Cheers.
You remember.
Yeah.
The Cheers spinoff called Cheers.
Yeah.
With an A.
Grey's Anatomy?
Bring the beards.
He said Grey's Anatomy.
Grey's
really?
Anatomy.
I was going to say that, guess, and then I thought it was
borderline.
Right. Okay. Dallas?
Wow. Nice.
Bum-bum. Dynasty?
Bum-bum.
Oh,
no. Then the point goes to Tara. So here's,
give us some of the other ones.
Okay. Well, one. Okay. First of all, Seventh Heaven.
Oh,
wow.
Christ.
The one I thought was going to go quickly.
Yes.
We're doing
Oh, Beverly Hills 90210.
Correct.
Of course.
Mm. CSI and CSI Miami.
Yep.
Ew.
Happy Days.
Oh, yeah.
NCIS's friend, Jag.
Oh, yeah.
The Hill.
Right.
Not Dynasty, but Knott's Landing is on the list.
Right.
Yeah.
One Order. CI is on this list.
Law and Order CI.
Really?
Yeah. Wow.
I didn't think it made it.
MASH, of course.
Of course.
Yeah.
Married with Children.
Yep.
Murder, She Wrote, Murphy Brown, Smallville, South Park.
Wow.
The Jeffersons is the rest of the list.
Golly.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, so that puts Tara at two, correct?
Yep.
All right. Also from Gaetano 131 with 8 possible entries. And I did this one because I think it's going to be fun. It's just going to be an historical name guessing contest, I think.
Oh, no. Dave looks too delighted by this category. Oh, people in New York.
Names of the kids from 8 is enough.
Oh.
8 entries. Christ. And Joe is first again. 1970 names.
Is this the one with a Muffy?
I want to say that you do have to answer one right to get the point. If it gets to Tara, nobody's answers it correctly, and Tara does not get it, no points awarded.
Okay.
So to Sarah.
If only I could remember. I believe this is the one with Merle the Pearl, but he wasn't a kid. He was married to one of the kids who must have been Nate. Oh, no, that was the mom. Shit. Barbara.
Okay, now wait.
Okay, this is a total 100% blind guess.
This is what you have to do.
Yeah.
As I said.
Got it.
It's 1970s.
I understand.
Okay.
Susan. What? Oh,
David, God. Elizabeth, Joni, Mary, Nancy, Nicholas, Susan, and Tommy.
Nicholas, of course. Was that Adam Rich?
I don't know. I didn't watch that show. Potato, hot potato.
Christ. Yeah, work this out, Joe.
This is our fifth question. This was suggested by Adam Grossworth.
Oh. Uh-oh.
Researched and done by me, I may add.
Okay.
To great technical expense.
All right.
Adam, if I get this wrong, I swear to Christ.
But here's the interesting twist. We're going to have a little tiebreaker game right now that will decide the outcome in the event of a tie later.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
Okay, the category is...
This is for an actual Dave point.
The category is songs on Smash. Now, the tiebreaker metagame is who gets closest to the number of songs from Smash?
Oh, we have to guess the number?
How many items?
How many there were?
How many items? This is the tiebreaker.
Oh, okay. I'll say 20.
Write this down, Tara. 20?
Yep.
Joe is going to say.
I'm going to say 24.
24. Sarah will say,
I'm going to split the difference with my lucky number, 22.
Oh, an interesting bit. All right. So here we go. I'm not going to tell you how many.
Oh.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Songs on Smash. And Joe is first. And I just want to say there's a number of them. And I may have to do a little scrolling in my document. So bear with me if there's a little bit delay before you hear the right or wrong answer chime. Joe.
Okay. Let me be your star.
Correct. To Sarah.
Oh, I actually have to answer this for real. All right. Copacabana. Thank you.
The MGM Mambo.
The MGM Mambo. Oh, I see. We're under that.
It's very suspenseful.
Well, I do remember seeing something about the Mambo, but I have bad news for you, Tara.
What?
It's the 20th
Century
Fox
Mambo.
Well, that was
nicely done, Joe.
I can't believe I did
Adam,
all.
Call me up. I'll name as many songs as you want me to name.
Go ahead. You should.
Go, Joe. Let's hear
it.
There was Don't Forget Me.
Uh-huh.
There was They Just Keep Moving the Line. There was... Secondhand White Baby Grand. There was
there was a song called Smash.
There was a song called Smash. There was a song from Hit List called Broadway Here I Come. There was a song from Hit List called The Love I Meant to Say. There was one like Lexington and 53rd Street or something like that. I don't know. That's about as good as I can do. But
Lexington and 52nd Street.
And Let's Be Bad. Let's Be Bad was really good. And the National Pastime. Okay, that's
the National Pastime. That was the baseball one. I couldn't remember.
Yeah.
Well, sorry that was such a letdown, but that was amazing, Joe.
All right. Also from Monty Ashley, 19 items, weekend update hosts. So, Sarah, you're first.
Dennis Miller.
Seth Meyers.
Amy Poehler.
Tina Fey.
Jimmy Fallon.
Colin Quinn.
Oh, wow. Shit. Charles Rocket?
Nice.
Nice.
Norm MacDonald.
Kevin Nealon.
Sorry, I just lost the place.
Chevy Chase.
Cecily Strong.
Edwin Newman?
Me?
Yep.
Jane Curtin?
Nice.
Dan Aykroyd?
Nice.
Yeah, I'm done.
Don't want to take Benson. A
step. Nope.
So, Tara, you have to answer to get the point.
Brad Hall?
Wow. Nice. Of course. Spanglitz guy.
Who was pre-Dennis Miller? Was that Brad Hall, I guess?
Bill Murray was a Weekend Update host, apparently.
Yeah.
Brian Doyle Murray.
Wow.
Christine Ebersole.
Uh-huh. That was short-lived, I'm going to
guess. Yeah,
Jost. I'm going to say.
Did somebody say like,
Colin Jost? Oh, he's the next one.
Yep.
Yeah.
Gail Mathis.
Matthias, I think.
Yeah, well, it's spelled wrong
Matthias.
If it is. Yeah, all right, sure. Mary Gross. And that rounds out the list.
You did very well, guys.
Yeah. Hot potato, 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 hot potato. All right, from at Brian A. Ryder, who earns himself an extra credit. Movies spun off from Saturday Night Live. 14 items. 14
Come
items.
On.
Joe.
Wayne's World.
Night at the Roxbury.
The Blues Brothers.
Wayne's World 2.
Yep.
Coneheads?
Blues Brothers 2000.
Shit.
The Ladies Man.
Yeah, I'm done.
Superstar?
That's the one I was thinking
That's
of.
A good one. It's Pat.
Oh, sure. Okay. How many are left?
By my count, there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Jesus.
The Sprockets movie that was discussed and never got made?
Is that your answer?
Yes, because I can't think of anymore.
Valiant effort.
Joe, do you know any more? You don't need to.
MacGruber and Stuart yep. Saves His Family
oh,
were the two
MacGruber.
I had.
That's
sure.
right. Yeah. So the other ones, so this is a bit of a tricky one, but first appearing on the show before it was a movie, Bob Roberts.
Oh, yeah,
really?
Right.
And mm-hmm. Office Space was Milton
right.
first on Saturday Night Live oh, animated. Yeah. And a movie called Harold, which was a
okay.
minor character in a movie that cost a few million dollars and made $10,000.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well done, Harold.
All right, number 8's coming up. Hot potato, 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 hot potato. With 59 entries.
Oh.
Whoa.
And this, again, is going to be interesting. Pre-merged tribes from Survivor.
Oh, no.
Ah.
And we're to Joe first.
Really?
Pagong.
Pagong. Ding, ding. It's another scrolly one.
Are
Here we go.
Me? All right. I'm just going to start stringing syllables together.
Yep, yep.
You never know. Ogacore.
Yes.
Kucha.
Kucha with a K, right?
Taggy.
Yep.
Dalek.
I like that answer. That's you got a Dave point there, sir.
Thank you.
Yep.
Swear I'm a Viking.
Veterans?
Oh, You're gonna kill. Nope.
Villains?
Yeah.
Fuck.
Yeah. Joe, do you want to lay some on?
Oh, there was a Samburu there. There was a Sukjai somewhere.
Sukjai, sure there was.
There was a...
Yeah, this is just random syllables put together.
There was Yasha. My friend Brian was on Yasha. I got to shout him out. Uh-huh. That's about it.
There's one called Moto.
Oh, yeah, Moto.
Yes. Yeah.
I like their jackets. That was just for you.
What did they name the race... Did they name the race tribes after the race? Or
no,
did they...
it was from islands in the Cook Islands.
Oh, okay.
It was like Puka, Rarotonga Puka, Puka? And stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's fun
there
to
was
say.
A Puka Puka.
There's one just called Drake.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Drake and Morgan were the pirate ones.
Oh, Christ.
And, of course, there was villains, so there was also heroes. Among, say, 40 or so other ones. All right, also from Andrea, who gave us our first one.
Mm-hmm.
Celebrities who were participants on Who Do You Think You Are?
Oh,
the genealogy
okay, sure.
show.
The TLC show.
Yeah. Oh. No, was it TLC or was it NBC?
It was NBC and then TLC.
Okay. So, Sarah's first.
Oh, good. Lisa Kudrow.
Looking. Correct.
Well done.
Did I mention how many? 35.
Chelsea Handler.
Oh, God, you're going to kill me at this. Sarah Jessica Parker.
Mr. Parker, Matthew Broderick.
Christina Applegate.
Emmett Smith.
Wow.
Oh, nice. Now I'm just blind guessing, but since he's on every other goddamn show, Mark McGrath.
That's a good guess, though.
Thank you.
Zooey Deschanel.
Courtney Cox Arquette?
I was going to be my next total guess.
I was just going to be her, Matthew Perry. Were my two options.
Big list. Here's some highlights. Ashley Judd. Everybody's favorite Ironsides, Blair Underwood.
Sure.
Oh.
Everybody's favorite Ivory Snow girl, Brooke Shields.
Right.
And more. Edie Falco's on this list.
Mm.
Kim Cattrall. Lionel Richie. I think I actually remember the ad for that one. Hmm. All right. So... our 10th and final category is coming up. I feel like Sarah really missed out because on one of the earlier Hot Potatoes, we had the Law & Order
the
epic.
The entire Law & Order cast. It's true.
Yeah, anybody who's appeared in the opening credits of Law & Order.
That one went on for a while.
That one for a while, yes.
I think this might go on for a while, too.
Oh.
It is... celebrity guest star love interests on the television program known as Friends.
Oh, I like this one.
7 possible answers, Joe.
Celebrity guest star love interests.
Yes.
Okay.
And there's a couple that are like, they're there and they were objects of affection.
Sure.
Right.
And also, if it's not on the list, I'm going to...
defer to me.
Defer to the Friends people.
Tara, I trust you to be honest.
Of course.
So I start?
Yes.
Paul Rudd.
Tom Selleck.
Good one.
The Sean only
Penn.
One I know. Enjoy it.
Sean Penn, correct?
Hank Azaria.
Brad Pitt?
Tate Donovan.
Jon Favreau.
Benson.
What if that was correct? What if Benson was? God.
I would have watched the show more if that were right.
Dermot Mulroney.
Oh, God. Steve Zahn.
Jean-Claude Van Damme. Has
Brooke
himself.
Shields.
From the same episode, Julia Roberts.
Nice one. God, does she count as a... Well, Maggie Wheeler, does she count as a celebrity? She was a guest star.
Looking? She's not... Maggie Wheeler? Not on the list?
She played Janice, though.
She played Janice.
Okay. I don't know if she's a celebrity, but I'm going to let you go guess again, Joe, on that one. Now that we've set that parameter.
Okay. No, that's fair. Aisha Tyler.
Rebecca Romaine, at the time, Stamos.
Really? I honestly don't remember that.
She dated Ross. She was the dirty girl with the messy apartment.
Oh, Black God. True. Elle McPherson.
So I guess by that rubric, wait. Sorry. I was going to say Padgett Brewster doesn't count if Maggie Wheeler doesn't count. Oh, she does.
Padgett Brewster's really? On the list.
All right.
Well, if Padgett Brewster counts, Dina Meyer should count. Okay.
Wow, really? Birds of prey.
A lot on this list still.
Trying to be so fancy going in alpha order. And some big names.
Big names still on here. Gonna have to give me one, Tara.
Vincent Ventresca? No, he doesn't count. That was Fun Bobby.
Oh, Fun Bobby.
He counts to me.
I'm also gonna say out loud now.
Eddie Cahill!
That nice. There is one tricky answer in this group, too.
Okay. Soleil Moon Frye.
Okay. Oh, Ben Stiller.
Nice. Bruce Willis.
Oh God, what was the name of the girl who played Elizabeth? No, not gonna try and remember her name.
The young one? She's not a celebrity.
David Arquette.
David Arquette.
He was stalking Ursula in one episode. Okay, no, Charlie Sheen.
God.
I'll start giving some subtle hints.
Okay.
There is a female love interest that had appeared in...
Oh, Winona Ryder!
Of 10 seasons on a show.
Susan Sarandon.
Appeared in 10 seasons of a show, huh?
Yes, it was an answer in that hot potato from moments ago.
Oh.
God, show. I don't even remember what happened moments ago. God. I don't even know. Oh my God, am I going to go out on this one? Yeah, I don't know. I'm out.
All right, so here's some ones you haven't said. Alec Baldwin.
Oh, yeah.
Chris Isaac.
Sure.
From that Super Bowl episode.
Yep.
The one I was hinting at, Ellen...
Pompeo.
Oh, Ellen Pompeo, right. Yes, from college.
Gabrielle Union.
Sure.
Mr. Yeah. George Clooney.
Oh, yes.
Isabella
and Noah Wiley.
Rossellini.
And Noah Wiley.
Yeah.
Did somebody say Stamos?
No. I forgot about Stamos.
Kristen Davis.
He wasn't really a love interest, but yes. Okay.
Michael Rapaport.
Right.
Yeah.
The
cop.
Michael Vartan.
Oh, yeah.
Noah Wiley.
Michelle Vartan.
Selma Blair.
Yep.
And I think you said the rest, except for the final one, which was the trick one. David Schwimmer as Russ.
As Russ. That's right.
All right, Tara.
Yeah.
We're at the end of the game. Let's hear
well
the scores.
Earned.
Joe had 2 and I had 6.
I had 3.
Plus the tiebreaker.
The tiebreaker was the number of shows.
Oh, right. The Smash game. Yeah. Sorry. I wasn't sure if that was a tiebreaker
it was
or not.
A bunch of in the 20s.
Yeah.
Whoever guessed the highest wins, that useless point. Because the answer was 93.
What?
93 songs.
Wow.
On Smash.
Holy crap.
Oh, wow.
Tara.
Well, Tara, that means you have won.
Sorry, Joe. I wasn't trying to screw you out of a point. I thought that was the mid-game, like that was the tiebreaker point for later. I apologize.
No, that's fine.
Go ahead, Dave.
You're the best around.
What?
I don't know where that
clip
went.
You didn't have it early. Ready?
I had it, but it disappeared. Oh, well.
He was so sure that I would win.
All right, that is it for this season of Game Time.
You just ruined this
moment for me. I'm so,
so
sorry.
Much.
I can't find it.
You're terrible. We're getting divorced right now.
Yes, I'd forgotten. How long does it go on for? Oh, ages. Oh, goody, goody.
That's as good as you're going to get this time around. I'm so sorry.
And that aired in America yesterday.
All right, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. Cat Hazard took us through how to watch the Winter Games and various thoughts on the Olympics, and we went around the dial with Justified, The Biggest Loser, Face Off, and Joe's pick, which was
The Good Wife.
The Good Wife, of course.
And Broad City.
Somebody's at the door. While Sarah gets that, I'll tell you that Joe successfully put up My So-Called Life's Other People's Mothers for the canon. We crowned winners and losers of the week. And Tara was the winner of this week's Game Time and season. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole on behalf of Tara Ariano.
USA!
Joe Reed.
My life is so edited.
And Sarah D. Bunting, who might be back by now. Yay. This is Extra Hot Great. We'll see you next time.
Talking about human empathy. It's as useless as the Winter Olympics. This February on NBC.